Okay, so it's 12 midnight in Athens. So obviously I'm asleep right now. So my best idea is to show you pictures. I had 13 of them there, but I have taken 1800 pictures. So I can even have a, I can even have a follow-up class for this semester's class. So every day we'll see 13 pictures and discuss them. But so the next best idea is to actually try discussing mark codation processes. I think I got stuck in the middle. I did not get through all the MDP stuff before I left. Probably some of you already figured out the rest, but I think I would feel more comfortable if we are all on the same page regarding value and policy iteration, for sure. Then we'll talk about basically the FFR paper, okay? But before getting to that, I'll also tell you a little about what are the general directions that people have been pursuing in trying to improve MDPs, the MDP policy construction, both at the atomic level and then at the factored level. So first, you can try to compute the policies faster by just, rather than using the straightforward value and policy iteration, you can make them more directed. And we'll talk a little about that at least. And one other thing I want to talk about is MDP is a very general framework. Large number of problems that you have actually discussed, by putting restrictions on the MDP framework, you can get specialized MDPs, which are interesting enough in their own right. And they tend to have useful properties. So for example, if you think of planning, classical planning that you looked at as MDP, it doesn't require the level of, it doesn't require obviously the stochasticity, that's fine, but neither does it require the reward structure, right? Because you don't need rewards for intermediate states in classical planning. You only get rewards in the final state. Okay, and then once you get the reward, you die, because essentially, you're supposed to reach the goals, and then that's the end of that. So it turns out that particular class of MDPs, basically there is a name for them, they're called SSSPs, Stochastic Shortest Path MDPs. Okay, so essentially it's the shortest path. You're trying to find, there are some number of nodes, let's say, they're all considered plus one reward, and everything else has zero reward, except this plus one reward become, in fact, you can say that there are these nodes which essentially are sink nodes, so you have to reach them with the lowest amount of cost, and each action has a unit cost. And once each action has a unit cost, then trying to reach one of the goal nodes as fast as possible, the fewest number of actions, is what the optimal policy will wind up doing. So in the deterministic version, that would just be the shortest path algorithm, right? So, in fact, we will at least, we'll talk a little about those kinds of special cases which are directly relevant, in terms of special models of MDPs. And in fact, when you come to FFHOP already, it's assuming certain restrictions on the reward structure, for example. It's more or less assuming that you're using FF to find plans, right? And if you're using FF to find plans, they are classical planning problems. That means you don't think about the rewards you are getting in terms of the states that you are visiting. You only just get to the goal state and count the number of actions you have taken, right? So in fact, one of the interesting questions with respect to FFHOP, for example, there are many other questions, but one interesting question could be, if I have many goals and I want to just achieve as many of them as possible, okay, that's more general MDP structure, right? So you have intermediate states can have rewards, and then if you're trying to compute the optimal policy for that using FFHOP, okay, then you would be solving, the determinizations would be solving not classical planning problems, but a general version of classical planning called oversubscription planning, where you have many goals and you want, and also in fact, it's more than oversubscription, actually you also want to take into account the paths that you go through. So there may be things called trajectory constraints, so that you would get through the right set of states on the way to the goal state, okay? Anyway, so we will get through the get to FFOP in that slightly convoluted way. I won't just go directly to FFOP. I might get to it by sort of middle of today. Okay. So as I said, I want to make sure that we're all on the same page regarding MDPs. So I'll try to go through this fairly fast. I mean, I think I went express fast last class because we kind of, you know, had a lot more time setting up the problem and, you know, much less time going through the value and policy iteration. But, you know, if you have questions, stop me and ask me. If you don't have questions, then we'll just go through it faster. So there is a value of policy. Did people understand how values of policies are defined, essentially? Okay. And then, so you're trying to compute the optimal policy. And finite horizon is easier case to understand. In the finite horizon case, you essentially wind up looking at a non-stationary policy. Okay, a non-stationary policy which will tell you, in essence, first of all, basically the optimal way of acting in the finite horizon case depends on how far you are from the horizon. If you are at the horizon, that means you only have, basically you have no actions you can do. Okay, in that case, you know, whatever state you are in, that is the reward you get, and that's the end. Okay, but if you have one step to live, if you have, so you're just one step away from the horizon, then whatever action you do will take you to the state where you'll die. That's the end of your life. So you want to plan to make sure that, you know, take those actions which will take you to the best states to die in. And, you know, the states you want to die in are the one which have higher immediate, I mean, in general what you want to talk about is the states with higher value. But if you're dying in that state and you're not going to do anything more from that state, then the value of the state you get is also its reward. Right? I mean, remember again, I make this distinction between the value and reward of a state. Value of a state is the reward plus what you can do from that state forward. But if you're going to that state to die, it's like leaving Las Vegas, then the best you can expect is the reward of that state. That's it. Yes?
Is the reward of some of the states you have gone through or only the final state that you reach? Is the plan preferred that goes through 99 states that have...
No. The reward is defined in terms of... That's an independent issue, which is whether it is finite or infinite horizon. Basically, reward is defined in terms of the sequence of states that you have gone through. So if you have gone through states S1 to ST, then the reward is a function of R1 to RT. What that function is, you know, it can be any different thing, but the normal, the two classes of reward aggregations that we consider are summation, R1 plus R2 plus etc. RT, and discounted summation. Those are the things that we considered here. There are in the normal MDP literature, in a wider MDP literature, they also consider things like average reward. So you want to maximize the average reward you're getting per time step. These basically maximize the aggregated reward you are getting. Okay. The question is, how are you doing the aggregation? The simplest aggregation is sum them up. Simplest discounted aggregation would basically do a discount factor and sum. Yes.
Simplest aggregation would be take the final one.
No, I mean, in the sense, that's, all I'm saying is, you are supposed to make all of these count. So you're going through a set of states. Now, in fact, again, I guess the word simple is subjective. So simplest aggregation for you could be log of S1 plus exponent of S2 plus something. You know, that could be simple for you. Okay. So in fact, the only thing I'm talking about is it's an aggregation function over the rewards of the states that you have gone through. There are multiple aggregation functions that have been tried in the literature. The most useful ones for us are simple summation of all the states you have gone through. If you want only the final state to count, the way you do it in MDP is to set the MDP such that the rewards only occur in some state, not the other state. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's like telling me that only the last state reward counts is not going to help if I'm having fun going through the middle state.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying? So if you really want me to care only about the last state, make every other state zero reward for me, so I should feel indifferent to them. Otherwise, I'll start enjoying the journey. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's if you want this to become just the reward of RT, then the way you do it is you make only certain states have rewards, I mean non-zero rewards. That's the usual thing to do. Okay. So now what we are doing, of course, is we are trying to compute the optimal policy for the finite horizon MDP, which will basically be one thing that we know about finite horizon MDP. If you go back to value of a policy definition, okay. So if you are talking about the value of a policy, if you are at a certain state S and you're trying to compute what is the value of the policy if you're starting from this state. So what you do, you would start from this state and do what the policy says. Since it's a finite horizon policy, it'll only tell you what to do for k steps, where k is the horizon. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, if in fact, so the largest any sequence of states you will ever exhibit, and sequence of states is also called behavior. So an outsider sees you going through these states. Okay, so largest behavior you can ever exhibit in a finite horizon MDP is k, where k is the horizon. You can have smaller than that. Like for example, you can die prematurely, right? So we'll assume, let's say, that human life finite horizon of, let's say, 95 years. So the largest anybody has 114, I guess. Largest anybody has lived is 114 years. So that's finite horizon. But many of us can die before that. So every sequence that you show would be bounded by that length, 114. And then for each of these sequences, you can aggregate the rewards, average them out, and then that will become the value of the state. Okay. So again, let me make sure that, again, we are all in the exact same page. So if I'm in state S and I have a policy pi, what exactly does it mean to compute the value of that policy starting at this state S? How do I make the behavior happen? So you are, the pi is basically a mapping from states to actions, right? So you look up pi and then says, oh, you're in state S, you're supposed to do action A1. So you do action A1. You do it. When you do it, some other state will happen, S2. Now you go back to pi and say, what am I supposed to do if I'm in S2? He'll tell you what action to do. Then you do that action, let's say A7. Then you get S9. Then you go back to pi and tell me, you know, ask it what you do. So you keep doing this. At some point of time, pi says, well, you ask me k questions. You're only supposed to ask me k questions. You can't ask me any more questions. If it's a non-stationary policy, in the beginning, it essentially, what the policy is saying is you have k more steps to go. So if you have k more steps to go, the best action to do in state S is A1. Now I say I got S2 by doing that action. Now the non-stationary policy says you only have k minus 1 steps to go. So the best action to do in S2 is A7. So in fact, if it has been the case that you started with S2 in the beginning, the action, the best action may have been something else because you have k steps to go, not k minus 1 steps to go. So this is what it means to follow the policy. Okay? And then, so of course, this sequence is being exhibited. So when does the sequence end? It can end either because you reached k, you ask k questions, after which basically the policy won't answer any more questions. You're supposed to only live for k horizon. Okay? Or one time, you know, you'll get into, let's say, S9, and then S9 pi says, okay, do A15, and then you did A15, and you got to S bad, you know, which is a state. And the policy says if you are an S bad, you do nothing. Basically, there is no action to get out of S bad. If you reach S bad, then it's S bad, S bad, S bad, S bad, S bad. It's like one of those ER, you know, things, you know, ding, 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 like that. So it's like you stay in S bad. You're dead for K horizon. So you can keep asking the policy. It'll say, if you're in S bad, do nothing, you'll be in S bad again. Okay, so ending basically means the rest of the states all are S bad, and so they will have the same reward. Okay, so this is what one behavior is. Now, having shown this one behavior, you can compute its aggregated reward. You do this 10,000 times from this state. Average their aggregated reward. That would be the value of state S. That's what is the value of state S. You make sure that you understand it. Yes, sir.
Why would it be different if you ran it?
Tell me. I mean, again, I'm sorry, I have to ask these questions to make sure that some of you probably know more, some of less, but I want all of us to be at least in this place, you know. So why do we need to do the policy multiple times? Why?
Stochastic. Yeah.
That's why. If it's deterministic world, you should be kind of asking yourself, why the heck am I doing the same policy again and again? The point is, after you do an action A1, this is actually doing the action in the world. I'm not simulating a policy. This is essentially, if you were to follow this policy in the real world, you know, there is a certain distribution with which the states will actually occur.
Sure.
So that's all I'm saying. So I'm not sure what your point is. Your point is that yes, remember that you're going from here. This is the bedrock. This definition of value of a policy is limit h tends to 0, f of x plus h minus f of x by h as the definition of derivative. Okay, everything else follows from here. You know, you could use that as a shortcut to compute the value. In fact, we look at a much better way to compute the value of all the states without having to do this in the hard way. But this way makes sense. I mean, and if you want to understand what is the derivative supposedly doing, you know, this is what it is doing. It's trying to compute the slope, you know, as the point comes close, arbitrarily close. And what's the value of a policy trying to do? It's considering if you were to follow this policy multiple times, what is the average aggregated reward you can expect to get starting from this state? And that is what a policy is telling you. Okay? Now, instead of doing it this hard way, which you can do, okay, and now this is only to, so this is the way to compute the value of a policy. Now, finding an optimal policy can be done in one dumb way, which is if there are S number of states and you have A number of actions total, right? So in the first state, you can do any of A actions. In the second state, you can do any of A actions, etc. So it's A power S. A power S number of policies. Only A power S number of policies exist, which is great because it's a finite number of policies. So for each one of these policies, you compute their value vector this way. And then you would say that the optimal policy is the one which is higher than all other policies, you know, whose value vector is higher than all other value vectors. That's what is the definition of optimal policy. So you have one dumb way of doing it. It's obviously exponential way of doing it. It's exponential in the space of, in the size of state. S is occurring in the exponent, right? So starting from there, it is nice that value and policy iteration are only polynomial in the space of state. So you have to first, you know, reduce your expectations so that you'll be happy with the reality. So if you come from the planning side, if you come from the factored planning side, you realize that the number of states is exponential in the number of literals. So being polynomial in the number of states is no good, really. That means it's exponential in the number of, you know, state variables. So you feel more depressed if you go that way. But if you come this way, if I try to do, optimal policy in the dumbest way possible, I would have done much worse. And by using dynamic programming, I'm really improving significantly. And then, of course, I'll try to improve even more. Okay? So that's basically the story of finding optimal policies. Okay, so now except because we are Markov, that means the value of a state, so the reward of a state depends only on that state, and the outcomes of an action taken at that state depend only on that particular state, it turns out that the policy will wind up having a structure. In particular, if you know what is the optimal thing to do, if you only have one day to live, then if I tell you, oh, I found that you have 2 days to live, okay, you don't need to start from scratch. You can use your policy for doing the optimal thing when you have only 1 day to live as the last part and compute the policy for what to do when I have 2 days to live. Do you understand what I'm saying? So policy is now being, you know, policy is a, you know, mapping from states to the action, but indexed by the horizon. Previously the horizon was one, so you already computed that part. Now you compute the second part, just the second part, and the first part is already, you know, computed previously. So it doesn't change. Now that you have 2 days to live, you don't change what you're going to do in the last day. It's a tricky point to understand. It's not always true. It's only true because MDPs are Markov. You want to convince yourself of that. You should be able to come up with cases where, in fact, what the optimal thing you would do on your last day of life would be different if you first thought that you were going to totally live for 3 days versus first thought you will live for 10 days. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's a very interesting point at that the last day, what you're supposed, the optimal thing you're supposed to do on the last day shouldn't depend on what you did before. That's the Markov part. So if you only have 1 day left, it doesn't matter how many days you lived until that day. If you only have 1 day left, the optimal thing to do is just the same. And if you have 2 days left, then optimal thing to do again, it just depends on, you know, the 1 day left policy. Okay, it's that structure that helps you in computing the optimal policy in one fell swoop, rather than going through this really crazy idea of going through exponential set of policies and simulating each of them separately. Okay, so you really have to compare this to what are you doing next, which is a huge, huge improvement, and it only makes sense because of the Markov property. Okay. So value of the utility, value depends on the stage to go, which is how many states you have left. And if you have zero stages left, you know for sure that the value is equal to the reward of the state. If one state is left, the value is equal to the reward of the state plus the expected value of taking the optimal action from that state. Okay, now the interesting question is how do you... So, actually, let's look at the picture. Yeah, so if I figured out what is the value at time t, you know, for example, you would have figured out value at zero, you know, t equal to zero, which is like I'm dead right now. So the value is the same as the reward of the state. Okay, and then I can compute the value at time t plus one in terms of the value at time t, by essentially taking the reward of state S plus consider the best of these actions. Now for each action, if I take A1, I'll get to this state with 0.7 probability and this state with 0.3 probability. This stuff, I'm not making it up. This is supposed to be part of your model. You're supposed to know what your actions do. Okay? And similarly, A2 would have taken me here with 0.4 and here with 0.6. Now the question is, what is the expected value of doing A2? Expected value of doing A2 is the 0.4 times the expected value of S2 and 0.6 times expected value of S3. Except we already know what those values are, because by the time you come here, you only have three more stages to go and you know what the value is by that. So if you are computing it backward, you know the values at the zero stages to go, which is just the rewards. And the one stage to go would be computed in terms of zero stages to go. Two stages to go would be computed in terms of one stage to go, and so on. And so you do this k times, you will get the k value function. Now, of course, what I wanted was the policy function, not the value function. But if I give you the value function, you know what is the policy. Right? So, for example, if I give you the value function, then the policy would basically just greedily exploit the value. So consider the action that will give me the highest expected value from that step. Okay. Anyway, so that's basically what you wind up doing here. So this one has some value, this one has some value. You can compute these in the backward fashion. And this is the dynamic programming structure. You're doing it, you know, you're computing the t stage to go, I mean t plus one stage to go in terms of t stage to go value function, which itself is computed in terms of t minus one stages to go and so on. And the zeroth stage is the base case, which is just the reward. Because if you have nothing else left, then whatever you get is the reward. Okay? So this basically is what is being said here, which is if you have zero stages to go, then the value of the policy is the same as the reward of the state, whichever policy it is. If you have zero stages to go, then your plan doesn't matter. Right? Zero stages to go means you're dead. And if you're dead, your plan doesn't matter. Wherever you're dead, that's the place you got your reward from. Okay? And if you have k stages to go with respect to your policy pi, then the value can be, value is the reward of that state f, okay, plus doing the same policy pi from the remaining state. So if you are at state s, and if the pi fk says you have k more stages to go, so it tells you what is the action you are supposed to do, and that action will tell you what's the probability of going from f to f dash, the transition probability. And that transition probability times the value of f dash, but only when k minus 1 stages are left to go. Because once you go to f dash, this way you have used up one of your stages, so you only have k minus 1 stages to go. So that's your recursive equation, I mean, you know, in terms of, so this is the recurrence in this case in terms of k stage policy is being computed, I mean k stage value function is being computed in terms of k minus 1 stage value function. Okay? Right? And then this one we know it's already. Okay, so essentially this, what I did here was to compute for a given policy, the value of a given policy, rather than do a huge simulation the way I did it previously. I'm computing a value of a policy in terms of just this set of equations. Right, these are basically equations. So you already know for the zeroth level, you already know these numbers, and so this is just a sequence of updates. You know, the first level you can compute, second level you can compute. For each policy of a power f policies, you can compute this, the values. Right? Now I want the optimal policy, which is supposed to be giving me the best possible value. Best possible value. So the interesting thing that we're doing here is in this equation, I'm looking at my policy, the policy that I currently am holding in my hand, and I'm asking it, what will I get, you know, what am I supposed to do if I'm in state S and I have K stages to go? Right? Now, different policies will give different numbers, different probabilities here. Different probabilities here. Now, the interesting thing is, if you were to maximize over all the policies, then essentially all you would care is of all the actions that can be done from the state S, which is the best action to pick. Okay, that instead of being, in this case, instead of being just a series of linear equations, it becomes a set of nonlinear equations because you would need to do a max. Okay, so you should make sure that you understand the difference between this equation, which is setting up optimal value for k stages to go in terms of optimal value for k minus 1 stages to go, as against this equation, which is setting up value for policy pi with k stages to go in terms of value for policy pi with k minus 1 stages to go. This one is for a single policy. You could use this those many times to compute which is the best policy, or you could just use this one equation. It's a nonlinear equation. Okay? And then you can use it in iterative fashion. You can start from the zeroth and then, you know, update iteratively until you get to k stages. Okay? So in essence, what you're doing is you're computing the optimal policy without enumerating over all the policies. And in doing so, essentially, you are exploiting the fact that if you have one stage to go, the optimal policy for that stage is not going to, what you're going to do, as I said, if you only have one stage to go, the optimal thing you're supposed to do would always be the same. Whether you had five stages to go and lived to come to just the last stage, or only had two stages to go and lived to come to the last stage. Okay? So, in terms of this is max over all actions A, that's the thing, okay? And it can be done, and this particular way, so the way you can do this, you don't have to solve these equations. In essence, what you're doing is, the zeroth level, you already know the value. The first level, you essentially know the possibilities, and you take the max of the possibilities, okay? Which is basically what's being done here, okay? So, in the zeroth level, let's say I have four states. I know their values because their rewards are their values. At the first level, I'm trying to compute the values of these states with one stage to go, optimal values with one stage to go. Optimal values are defined indirectly in terms of optimal policies. Okay? And so what I do is, if I'm in this state S, I could have done this action, or I could have done that action, and then whichever is the bigger value is what I would pick. Right, because ultimately the value of this guy is the reward of this state plus expected value of this action or expected value of this action. And if you have a choice, you pick the one which will give you the bigger number. And now what's interesting is you know these numbers already. So you know this sum and you know this sum. So you pick the bigger number, add it to the reward. That would be its value. Okay? And then, we have this S4 value for one stage to go is reward for S4 plus max of doing this and doing this. So it's not particularly complex. You're not really solving equations. You're using this max operator to iteratively update the value. Okay? And this operation, whatever I just did, it's called, so in fact I did this for this state, one state value. Now I can do the same thing for the other state values. This operation is called Bellman backup. This operation is called Bellman backup, essentially. Okay? So you're considering all the actions possible and then picking the one that will give you the best expected value. And in the finite state case, this is well defined because you're computing the best expected value k stages to go in terms of best expected value k minus 1 stages to go, which are already done by them if you did it in that particular 0 first, then 1, and so on. Okay? So, the dynamic programming, this is a huge thing in MDP community. They keep talking about dynamic programming and how great it is. And if you just assume that's the obvious thing to do, you won't be impressed. Right? You need to understand why they are impressed. They are impressed because of this. If it wasn't a Markov decision process, the Markov part isn't important, then you cannot really say that the policy for k stages to go would include k minus 1 stages to go entire policy. So for example, what's more interesting is that if I thought I will live for 90 years and I computed my optimal policy, okay, which will basically say the year I'm about to die, I'll do these actions, 2 years before that I'll do these actions, and so on. So there are 90 such. The policy repeated for 90 horizons. Now there is, due to modern, medicine and miracles, I now realize that I have 2 more years to go, 92 years to go. What's interesting is this entire thing can be copied over. And then I say, I have 91 years to go, 92 years to go. And only these two things I have to compute. So optimal policy for 92 years contains optimal policy for 90 years. And this is what is called the optimal substructure. Okay. Optimal substructure does not always hold. It only holds if you have Markov property. If the value of a state depends on how you got there, then it's not going to hold. Okay? Yes.
Add 2 years to your life and you're 46 years in, you're adding to the other side of that. and that the state of the world can depend on.
No. Imagine that you, whenever you knew, so at some point of time you knew how many years you're going to live.
Yeah.
And you went and computed the optimal policy for your entire lifespan. And then you stored it in under some safe. Okay. Now, of course, if you have 45 years, you already lived in that, and then the modern miracle happened. So if you originally thought you only have 90 years left, and if you actually lived 45 of them, right, and then they find that you have, in fact, in your case, it's a very interesting situation that happens. When you are in the 45th year, you find that you only normally are expected to only have 45 more years to go. But because of modern medicine, you have 47 years to go, which means you don't have to recompute the policy at all. You just have to, instead of thinking, I only have this much of the policy to execute, now I have that much of the policy. Because two more years are included.
So that's assuming that the year 2011 is going to be the same as the year 2010.
That's basically the stationarity property that we discussed. Again, you know, as general as MDPs are, they have assumptions too. You look at them from the classical planning side, they look very general. Last class, I talked about all the special assumptions that MDPs are making. This class, I won't talk about it anymore. Okay, you should, you know, your point is well taken, but you make some assumptions. The assumptions are, one of them is stationarity of the transition, stationarity of the value. So the reward that a particular, you know, state gives doesn't depend on the calendar year, for example. That's important. Okay. Anyway, so in this particular case, value iteration, we talked about it, and so the complexity of the value iteration, you can easily see, is polynomial in the number of states, which is great because previously it was exponential just to compute the value of a single policy. Here you're computing the optimal policy. Actually, in fact, all I did was to compute the optimal value. Right? Now the point, of course, is that if I compute the optimal value, let me see if I can get there. How to act? Okay, this part. I'll go back to the previous slides again. So the point is, we are computing the optimal value. What we wanted is an optimal policy. Okay? But if I have the value, the policy is obvious. Okay, because then you essentially have already told you what is the, you know, you are in the k stages to go, and you know the values for k stages to go, k minus 1 stages to go, k minus 2 stages to go for all the states. Now you are in state S5 currently, and you want to know what action to do. Okay, so let's say you can only do two actions, A1, which will get me to either S5 or S6, or A2, which will get me to S7 or S8 with some probabilities. This is 0.9.1, this is 0.7.3. I know the optimal values of these guys. All I need to do then is 0.7 times this guy's value, k minus 1 stages, 0.1 times this guy's value, k minus 1 stages, add them up, compare it to this, see whichever is the best, that's the policy, that's the action you're supposed to do. So once you know the value function, you know the policy function. That's why we focus just on the value function. Yes, sir? Yeah. You can keep track. I understand. I mean, so I think the point, I don't know whether you got that, what he said, which is basically, you don't need to do what I said, because in trying to compute, let's go back to this. Okay, so here, remember, you're trying to compute this guy's value. When you computed this guy's value, you looked at all the actions that are available, compared them, picked the one with the maximum value, and then added it to the reward. All, you know, he's saying is, remember, suppose in this particular case, the orange one is the winner. So remember, here, orange is the winner. Then you have already computed the optimal policy along with the optimal value. Right? That's true. That's a very reasonable, very good point. But it's also the case that if I ever give you optimal, if I ever give you a value function, you can compute the greedy policy for it. If I give you a policy, you will see that you can compute the value function corresponding to it. So value and policy are duals, interesting duals. And so it would be useful to understand that if you do have optimal value, you can get to that policy. What's interesting, of course, is as you read from the policy iterations, right? If I give you a policy and I say what is its value, and let's say it's V, and then from that value I compute the policy, the greedy policy, this is not necessarily equal to that. Okay? So in essence, what happens is, if you think in terms of value functions, let's say for example I only have two states, S1 and S2 are the states. Okay, each value function is a point in this space. So if each value function is a point in this space. So I can talk about regions of value functions. For each region of value function, there would be a policy that is the best policy. So in the sense, for any of these value functions, the best action to do in S2 and best action to do in S1 are A1 and A2 respectively. If you come here, it will become A3 and A4 respectively, and so on. And this has to make sense because how many policies are there? Finite. How many value functions are there? Infinite. Because a value function is just a real valued vector. Right? So there are infinite number of value functions, only finite number of policies, so something has to give. More than one value function might lead to the same policy. So what policy iteration does, you read this, so I can say this already, what policy iteration does is essentially jumping, intuitively is jumping from one region to another region to another region. Okay? And since there are fewer policies than there are value functions, if you are iterating over policies, hopefully you will do fewer iterations. In fact, there are bounded number of iterations. You can never do more than these many iterations because there are only those many policies. For a value function, you don't know because there are infinite number of value functions, and so essentially you have to keep, in the worst possible case for you, you would have to go through all the, it looks as if you have to go through all the value functions, all the individual points. Okay? Okay, so there are, these points are actually important with respect to the FF hop. Also, for example, you need to talk about value functions computed by different kinds of policies. Okay? And in particular, here it's saying that value function of a state S with respect to the optimal policy is going to be greater than or equal to value function of the state S with respect to any other policy. Okay? So this is sort of like a weird version of the admissibility. So if you want to basically, so the admissibility in this case is you should look for the lower bounds for value functions. That's what is a heuristic for values. Okay? Because the optimal value would always be greater than or equal to value for any other policy. And those of you who read FFHOP carefully, you know that in fact FFHOP value function could be higher than the value function. Than the true value function. So in a sense, FFHOP basically is inadmissible heuristic. Okay? So another point I'm making here, which again may be obvious to some people or may not be for others, which is I started talking about heuristics. Where did heuristics come from? Okay? It turns out that you should think of values as heuristics, essentially. In a value function is a heuristic. Optimal value function is perfect heuristic. If you take deterministic MDPs, that means each action does one thing, there is no probabilistic distribution, then this will be exact identity. That the optimal value function in a deterministic MDP will be equal to admissible, will be equal to perfect heuristic. And the value functions that you will see on the way to the optimal value function could be the lower bounds. Okay? So there is a connection between our value functions and heuristics, and in fact, one of the ways people try to speed up atomic level MDP evaluation is, as we'll see in a minute, you can seed. Actually, let me state that, and then I'll come back to it in a minute. But so the next step that we're going to do in the main lecture is to go from finite horizon to infinite horizon. Right? Infinite horizon means the number of steps are infinite. You can actually solve that as the same way as the finite horizon case, and be sure that there is a theoretical guarantee that as you keep doing it for k equal to 0, 1, 2, etc., up to like 10,000, at some point of time, between two different k values, the value function won't change. Because if there exists a policy for an infinite MDP, then it better be stationary. Do you understand what I just said? If there exists an optimal policy for an infinite horizon MDP, then it must be stationary, because how the heck are you explaining, you know, I live for infinite number of years. Okay, so how many stages are you going to talk about for this policy? Right? And so it turns out that there's a theorem which basically proves that under, you know, basically the normal conditions, every MDP will have a policy, an optimal policy. And so it will have a stationary optimal policy. And so if you wind up, for the infinite case, if you wind up acting as if it's a finite horizon case and kept doing these updates multiple times, so 0, 1, 2, 3, etc., multiple times, after some number of iterations, you would find that the value function hasn't changed between two different iterations. And that would essentially be your stationary policy, the stationary value function. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's how infinite horizon MDPs are handled. And then it turns out that we'll get back to the heuristics in that case. It turns out that you can seed this value iteration with an approximately good value, you know, estimate for all the states. And then the value iteration could take much fewer iterations. So if you have a heuristic which is lower, you know, if it really is a deterministic MDP, let's say, if you have a good admissible heuristic, you would just go ahead and, you know, seed everybody's values not to be their reward values, but to be what the heuristic says is their value. And then the value iteration will converge much faster. Okay, that's the clean connection between heuristics and the value functions. Okay, so if you have discounted infinite horizon MDPs, then we talked about what it means to aggregate the behavior, I mean, reward for the behavior. You have to introduce one way of making sure that infinite series would converge is to kind of throw in this discount factor. Okay, that's what we do. And then we talked about why it can be rationalized. Now, we'll assume we did that now. So for the discounted infinite horizon, optimal policies are guaranteed to exist, and this is why Howard, who actually I think is Ron Howard, you know, is not the director Ron Howard, but much more interesting Ron Howard for us geeks at any rate, who basically showed that optimal policies are guaranteed to exist for MDPs, and he only showed it in 60, which, you know, if some of you are already alive, at least your parents were alive, basically, then it turns out that if the optimal policies are guaranteed to exist, then you can actually restrict your attention to stationary policies. Okay? And in the case of stationary policy, there is always an optimal stationary policy, and which can be computed by value iteration. That's what is called the normal value iteration algorithm, where you do the finite horizon value iteration indefinite number of times. In the finite horizon case, you only do it exactly k times if k is the horizon. Now you do it indefinite number of times. So this picture, so you do v0, v1, v2, v3, v4, v5, v6, etc. until such a time when the values between two iterations haven't changed much. If they have converged, that means they haven't changed much. Okay. Now, of course, how do you decide they have not changed much? You can say equal, but value functions are real valued. Two real numbers are never equal, right? So then what you need to do is you need to define a distance metric between two real valued vectors, okay? So remember that a value function is a vector whose length is the size of the number of states, right? Okay? So this one is v1 etc. up to vn 0. I mean, let's say this is the ith level, and here is v1 etc. up to vn I plus 1th level. In case of finite horizon, these are actual levels. In the case of infinite horizon, they're just iterations. They really have no connection to real world. It has no real connection to the horizon. Okay? So then basically what you're doing is you're taking what's the distance between these. The normal definition we use is you consider the difference between the absolute value of the difference between each of the dimensions. These are n-dimensional vectors. You take the absolute value of the difference between each of the dimensions. Take the max of those, that's the distance. So that is the maximum each of these vectors differ from the other in any dimension is considered their distance. That's a real number. And you can bound it, you know, by epsilon. And you can say that keep doing this until the distance between these two real valued vectors, between two successive iterations, is less than or equal to epsilon. That is how value iteration works. Okay. Okay, let's see. So that's basically the infinite horizon MDP value iteration. Okay. Now, the next question, of course, is this is something I already described. So instead of iterating over the value functions, which is what we had done till now, both for finite and infinite, you could directly iterate over policy functions. Especially for infinite horizon, it makes a lot of sense, okay? Because there are much fewer policy functions, and you know it would be nicer to just iterate over them. The only interesting question, of course, is the intuition in iterating over policies is you pick a policy randomly, compute the value function corresponding to it, and then if that was the value, you try to find out what would have been the greedy policy for that. And that might put you into the next direction, next region. And you keep doing this until policy between two iterations doesn't change. Okay. Now the interesting question, of course, is given a policy, you need to compute the value function for this. Okay. Given a value, you already know how to compute the policy, right? Given a value, you know how to compute the policy. In fact, that's what Alan was saying, that when you are computing the value, already you knew what the optimal action was. But if I give you a value function, you know what the policy is in general. Okay. Now, if I give you a policy, you can also compute what the value is. That would be solving a set of linear equations. Okay? Because, so here is the idea. So if I give you a policy pi, then value of, for infinite horizon case, value of a state S with respect to this policy pi has to be satisfying the following equation, which is a consistency between the value of a state and value of its neighbor, where neighborhood is defined in terms of actions that take you to those states and their probabilities. Okay? So basically you can, so the values can take, value of the state must be, it's like a spreadsheet kind of an idea. You know, individual cells can take any values, but there are global consistency relations. Neighborhood values all should conform to each other by this particular equation. Okay? And what is this equation saying? The value of the state S with respect to policy pi has to be reward for that state S plus, you know, if you have a, you know, the discounting, since you are doing infinite horizon, so you beta times, you consider what you can do starting from S with respect to pi, and then it will tell you what is the probability that pi, you know, done in S will take you to F dash for each F dash. And, you know, normally what happens is for most of these F dashes, this T will be 0. T is the probability, remember? So basically, if an action normally takes you from one state to probably five states, then all but five of these numbers would be zeros. And those five could be, would have to add up to one. And then times, for each that f dash you get to, you, that f dash has a value, remember? And with respect to the policy pi, and they have to be equal. That's all you're going to say. Now, this looks suspiciously like the equation that we saw somewhere. It basically looks suspiciously like what you did. Let me just show you this. This. Right? Value of a state S is in terms of reward of state S plus blah, 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 blah. This is, of course, there is a k and k minus 1. If it's infinite horizon, k and k minus 1 will be the same. So you can ignore them. Right? So this looks, this equation here looks sufficiently like the previous equation that I just showed you. What's the big difference? The max operator. There's no max. Max is evil because if you do max, then it's a nonlinear set of equations. If you don't have a max, then it's a linear set of equations. They can be solved using any linear equation solver. Okay? Okay. Right? Yes, so that's basically how you compute the value of the policy. So you solve the set of equations. Okay? And then, you know, this set of, this size basically computing the optimal value function we already discussed. It's just somehow it's in the wrong order. So in this case, the optimal value function is connected to, well, actually you can get here from this equation too. If optimal value with respect to a policy is connected to value with respect to the same policy of the other state, then the optimal policy would have the following property. So optimal value of a state is connected to the optimal value of the remaining, the neighboring states. In the sense of MDP, neighborhood is defined in terms of actions that are available and their probabilities. Okay? So that this is basically, of course, you know, has the max operation this time. And the way you do this is you act as if it's an indefinite horizon. One way of solving it is to act as if it's an indefinite horizon MDP and keep computing, you know, k stages to go value function for k equal to 1, 2, 0, 1, 2, 3, etc. And keep comparing the value function vectors between two iterations. And when they stabilize, you stop. And now that you understood this, now that you understood that, so in the case of finite horizon, every horizon value function has special meaning. V0 is different from V1, is different from V2, is different from V5. All of them are needed. In the case of infinite horizon, they're all supposed to be the same, right? Because you'll never be told that you only have one more day to live. You don't know the horizon. Okay, by the way, actually, there was this thing in somewhere, I wrote this, that the life that we live is interesting combination of both finite and infinite horizon, right? I mean, on one hand, we know that there is a sort of a kind of an upper bound, you know, there's this old lady in Soviet Union or Japan who seems to live 114 years, so there is an upper bound, but then you can always be the exception. You might live longer than that, okay? And then also you can get hit by a bus and die tomorrow. So one of this, a quote that I heard by Amish, an Amish quote basically says, act as if you will live for 1,000,000 years and you have one day to live. So I mean, again, these are proverbs. They don't have to have meaning. Okay, so you have to figure out what you're supposed to do. So the idea is you are somehow to trade off both. You know, if you do, neither of them is the right thing to do. You shouldn't act as if you will live forever, because then you will keep putting off homework, which is a bad thing to do. Okay, or putting off doing the good deeds, right? You know, you'll say, I'll do it like when I'm 90 years old, that's when I'll start giving money to charity. But then you're dead in like 60 years old and you haven't done anything good. Okay. But at the same time, you can't also, you know, you also have to consider the fact that you do have long time to live. So if you do bad things to some people, it can come back and haunt you, you know, because you live long enough that they can come back and get you. Right? So the Amish proverb for optimal policy is a favorite of mine. It says, act as if you have 1,000,000 years to live and that you might die tomorrow, which is basically what we have to do. Okay. But, you know, in this case, we separated those completely. One is a fixed horizon, the other is infinite horizon. And in the case of infinite horizon, essentially, you do this in, you know, the individual iteration value functions have no meaning. They have no meaning. Do you understand that, right? So you don't, I don't really care whether you ever computed V0, V5, V9, V25. I just want the optimal value function. Because of which, you don't have to start from V0 in terms of reward of the state. If your rich uncle tells you that, look, I think the optimal value function, I'm not completely sure, you know, if I have states S1 to S4, you know, your rich uncle might tell you, rich uncle always gives you the heuristics, right, from 471. So he might tell you, I'm not completely sure, but I think, you know, the close to optimal values for this is 0.7, 7.0, 4.15. You know, that's what I feel. You should try and see whether that will work. What would you do? You plug this as the V0. You plug this as the V0. Do V1 in terms of this. If this was indeed the optimal value function, V1 will be the same as V0. So your uncle was right. If not, you know, you might still be done much faster than if you started from immediate rewards as the value function estimate. Do you understand? This is how you actually speed up value function, value iteration. You start with a good heuristic. Okay, so if you were doing it over, let's say, planning, let's say, so for each state, you may have computed the relaxed plan heuristic. It'll tell you what is the expected value from there, let's say. It's an estimate, a bad estimate. But if you're doing value iteration, it doesn't matter if it's a good estimate or a bad estimate. If you start with any junk, you iterate. It's like a spreadsheet. They'll all have to work with each other such that they will come to global coherent configuration. You see what I'm saying? And this can only be done with infinite horizon, because for finite horizon, V0 matters, V1 matters, V2 matters. Each of them are separate. And your rich uncle now then, there's no point in having a rich uncle at that point of time, because they're not really helping you. Okay? And in fact, what happens when you have a value function at the ith iteration and then you go take it to the I plus 1th iteration is you're doing a Bellman backup. So essentially, as I said, exactly like spreadsheet metaphor. Okay? In the spreadsheet, all the neighboring cells look at each other and essentially, you know, apply their local consistency based updates. And then they do it again. And they do it again until they, you know, basically stop changing. Okay, so anytime, and the way this is being updated is using Bellman update, which is this max over the action. So what you actually can say is Bellman update, which is being done, I'm sorry for going back multiple times. So remember this, you know, one Bellman update from V0 to V1 is being shown here. Right, for V0 to V1, this is a V0 value, you have a value function. For V1 value function, you compute all the actions, expected values, add that, you know, add the maximum guy's value to the reward here. You'll get the number here, do this here, do this here, do this here. You get a new value function. Okay, now, I might say there are so many arithmetic operations I'm doing here. I'm adding, multiplying, adding, multiplying, and taking maxes, right? But I can also say that if you think of this whole thing as a vector, it's a four-dimensional vector, right? If I do this entire Bellman operation, I get a new vector. I get a new vector, V1. So you can think of what I'm doing at the lower level as just one operation at the vector level. And that's called the Bellman operator. Do you understand this? Okay, so now what you can ask is, what is the Bellman operator doing to my vectors? Value function vectors are being gobbled up by Bellman operators, being given a new vector, which is again being gobbled up by the Bellman operator, being given a new vector, right? So you can ask, actually, theoretically, what's happening when you do a Bellman operator. Basically, Bellman operator will take any value function and will take it to the fixed point. That means between two iterations, the value function won't change. This is sort of kind of like power iteration that many of you know, right? You know, but irrespective of wherever you start from, under fairly general conditions, if you decide the page rank values and then you keep iterating, you'll get to the right page rank values, because essentially primary eigenvector can be computed by power iteration. sort of what is happening here, except in this case the conditions are much more general. Okay, if you even start with random values or the reward values, in fact if you start with reward values for the state as the initial value function, then you are guaranteed that Bellman will reach the fixed point. Okay, there is a special case. So remember in the page bank vector we said there are cases where if you start with really bad seeds you may never converge, like all zeros, you will never converge. Is that a problem here? Think, guys. It's amazing that I am actually more awake than you guys. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, I sort of said things, you know, I made a connection to the power iteration, and I said in the power iteration for computing the primary eigenvector, which several of you know, it almost doesn't matter what the initial value is, but some really bad values can kill you. If you say everybody's page rank is zero as the initial value, then the next level also they'll be zero. The next level also they'll be zero. So you'll never actually get to the primary eigenvector. What happens if you said everybody's value is zero? What?
They can't change.
How many of you think if you gave value function for everybody to be 0, V0 to be 0, then V1 also will be 0? What?
Yes.
This is why it's more general. It's much harder to cheat this guy. Even if you started with zeros, remember the RS? So it makes the by one iteration later. So the normal minimal intelligent thing to do is to give the value, the V0 value to be the immediate reward itself. But if you are like out to get the value iteration and give it all zeros, it will recover by one iteration and become the normal thing. And then after that it will go to the fixed point. Right? Right? That's a cute thing, right? I mean, so again, I think just as this Bellman operator is connecting, you know, every state's value to every other state's value, and it's these connections that make sure that the fixed point exists. Learning is also similar in some weird way. You know, you have to make sure that whatever you're learning is connected to everything else you learned. So that's the only way you won't lose things. I mean, you know, at least there are more things it's connected to, so the whole thing won't fall down. I mean, unless you get Alzheimer's, which you can, you know. But I'll get it before you. Anyway, So what Bellman operator is a contraction over these value functions such that, you know, it takes a value function and returns a new value function such that one of the interesting things is that you can show that the distance between two such vectors will keep reducing monotonically. Distance as defined this way. So at some point of time, the epsilon should become, you know, it will reach below epsilon, whatever epsilon you pick. Okay, and that's a nice point actually. It will converge to the optimal value function as k gets large. Why? Because of this. It's a contraction operator on the value function. Bellman operator is a contraction operator on the value function, that such that as k gets large, the distance between k and k plus 1th value functions will k and k plus 1th value functions will be more than the distance between k plus 2 and k plus 1 value functions. That means value functions are becoming closer and closer, or value vectors are becoming closer and closer. And so you put a random metric saying they should be at least epsilon close, they will reach that. Okay, so under the hood, there's a lot more to MDPs than, you know, you may just read up front, other than, you know, just say, yeah, there's value iteration work. And the more you understand this, the more you understand the theory of why some algorithms work, and also whether you can make claims on whether they'll be optimal or not, for example. Yes, sir. So, speed is not guaranteed. No, speed is not guaranteed. Under some cases it's guaranteed. I mean, under some cases you can put bounds on how fast it will fall, but generally it's not guaranteed. Okay, it's assured, at least it's asymptotically it's guaranteed to converge. Okay, and as I said, one way to improve the speed of convergence is to start with an almost good estimate to begin with, right? Which is a huge improvement, huge thing for infinite horizon one, because it's very easy to get the estimates. The estimates are, you know, one value for each state is the only estimate your rich uncle has to give you. Whereas, you know, if it's a finite horizon, A, they have to give you k values for each state, and B, there is no obvious way of using them. Think about this. Well, you know, even if your, you know, uncle gives you a finite horizon value function estimate, how do you use to improve your iterations? You still have to do k iterations. All you can say at the end of which is, ah, you're not a good uncle, or, you know, you're really good uncle, but you wasted your work anyway. Okay, so if this is really useful only for the infinite horizon case.
Hmm. You know, it's zero. But what happens if your reward?
What?
What happens if your policy is erroneous? You know, you start off with a.
No, remember, when you are computing value functions, you are never really thinking about policies.
Okay.
In fact, you compute value function 1 in terms of value function 0, value function 2 in terms of value function 1, and when value functions don't change anymore, the last set of value functions you have, then you convert them into policy. So in this particular case, Alan's previous idea is not as useful. In fact, I would argue that he would make you do more work, in essence of remembering, you know. So in the case of finite horizon case, while you're doing the backup, you may as well remember what was the optimal value for that horizon. In the infinite horizon case, these are all bogus value functions, right? V0 has no meaning, V1 has no meaning, only V star has meaning. And you only need what is the action to do for V star. So why even bother remembering what it is for the previous iteration? Compute V star, change it into policy. That's why it's actually worth remembering how to convert value into policy. Okay? Okay. Then one last thing, and then I guess we will probably have to stop today. Okay, so policy iteration is the other thing that I mentioned in the class earlier, which is essentially if you given a fixed policy, you can always compute its value exactly. And then given the value, you can compute the greedy policy. And you do this repeatedly until policies don't change from iteration to iteration. Now, unlike value functions, policies are discrete vectors. Right? Discrete vectors. So you can actually say two discrete vectors are identical. That means this vector is saying do A1 here, A2 here, A3 here. This is also saying A1, A2, A3, so they're exactly equal. If this said A1, A2, A3, this said A5, A2, A3, I can't quite define what the distance is, other than some sort of they differ in one dimension. Okay? So what policy iteration normally does is it, you know, guesses a policy, any random policy, okay? Compute the value corresponding to that policy using this set of linear equations. And then after you got the value function, act as, and then try to say, if I was doing the greedy thing with respect to this policy, what policy would I have done? It almost looks like there is some magic going on. You started from policy, went to value, but then when you converted the value into policy, you're getting a new policy, not the first one. And that you need to understand clearly. Okay, basically what's happening is, in one case, this value function corresponds exactly to this particular policy. Okay, but given a value function, you could do picking the greedy action selection based on that. That's a uniquely defined policy. Okay, so in general, the point is, multiple policies can have the same value function. This is the thing that you want to remember. And they have to, because there are infinite number of value functions, there are finite number of policies. If you forget everything else, at least you should remember this. So your original policy has this value, but then so are many other policies have this value. Among them, pick the guy which would be the greedy policy. In fact, actually no. In fact, one of the interesting things is that's not correct. Even though it's the end of the class, you should remember this. So when I pick the, I started with a policy, I got a value function, right? There are, let's say, so I have phi 1. I convert it into V1. I know going into this that not only pi 1, pi 1 dash, pi 2 dash, and pi 3 dash, blah, 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 all of them would have also gone to V1 because multiple policies would have gone to the same value function. It has to be the case. However, if now I take V1 and I took the greedy policy corresponding to that, let's say that is pi V1G. The question you want to ask, and you have to explain to me next time when you come back, is this present in this state or not? If it is, then there is no point. It's like you're just going to find your consanguineous relatives. You'll never get to the next better person, next better value function. You have to understand this. Okay? So when there are multiple value functions that correspond to the same value function, multiple policies that correspond to the same value function. Given a policy, you do find that value. But then given the value, you compute a greedy policy corresponding to that value. This guy's value would not have been this. It would be something else. And that's how you go from one region to another region. And only when the value and policy are optimal is this guaranteed to be the same as what you would do by evaluating the policy. So if you evaluate a policy, you get a value function. If you do the greedy action selection given a value function, you will get a policy. Normally, it's not guaranteed that starting from pi, evaluating it to get a value, doing a greedy action selection, you would get the same policy. It's not guaranteed. It's only guaranteed when you have optimal value and policy function. Yes. Okay, that's what actually policy iteration was. And in fact, again, the same guy, Ron Howard, is the guy who invented the policy iteration algorithm, which is great. And to understand why it works, it's slightly more involved. You know, in fact, I almost made a mistake trying to explain it to you. And if in fact, all I'm doing is finding one more of these guys, that means I'm still finding somebody in the same region. I need to get into the next region. Okay, the theory of policy iteration is much more interesting than the theory of value iteration. Okay, now, but the procedurally it's very simple. You just do this set of linear equations. Now, what's interesting, of course, is you can also speed up the policy iteration by, instead of actually solving these linear equations, you can just run a set of value iterations on these linear equations. So, rather than solve them, you act as if you are actually just computing V0, V1, V2, except without the max operator. So this is a lazy way of iteratively solving linear equations. All you need to do is do just a few iterations of that, you'll get a slightly better value function. You don't need to get the exact one. And that is the hybrid value policy iteration algorithm. So it tries to evaluate the policy by doing value iteration, and it tries to go from one policy to another policy by doing policy evaluations. That's faster than this algorithm. That's considered a new algorithm, actually. But these are the two main ones that you have. And I'll have to stop here. And the main thing to remember in policy iteration is that it takes theoretically fewer number of iterations, because its number of iterations are guaranteed to be less than the number of policies, which are only finite. But then per iteration, cost of policy iteration is much higher. And the theoretical guarantees on policy iterations are hard to come by. Even now, it's an open problem as to exactly how many iterations are needed. You know, it has to be less than this. But how far do you really need to go? That's not known yet. Okay? And so we'll come back next class. And in view of what we understood here, we'll talk about FFHOP.